Welcome to the Electronic Entertainment Expo Extravaganza, only on GamingUncensored.com. E4.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to episode 6 of E4 2017. That is right. We are back. Not in the same room anymore, which is a shame, but I'm Tommy. Jamie's sitting way over there at this point. How you doing, man?
I'm good, sir. So glad to be back.
It is nice to be back. It's a bummer to be in different cities at this point. We're just working through tech stuff again and trying to make everything work as we usually do.
Can I say something? My life is vastly better when we're doing this show on a regular basis.
Like I agree.
My life is like greatly improved. Because I felt real good for like 4 days, and then you left, and I got depressed.
Yeah.
It's like, crap, I gotta go back to life. Yeah. I don't want to go back to life. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I spent all day yesterday working and catching up on what I've missed for being off for 4 days. And so, yeah, it's like, aw, this is real again.
I don't like it. It's not good.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So, but we're back right now, which is fun, and we get to do this for at least a little bit longer.
Right, and we got a big day because we got about an hour here, and then we got the round table in a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I'm really excited about because my family asked me what I was going to do today, and I said, I'm going to work, and then I'm going downtown to podcast, and they're like, why? And I'm like, because we got to finish up. And they're like, oh. they don't understand what it is that you and I do.
I know.
So, yeah. So, yeah, but it's good to be here. We're going to wrap up E3, which I'm excited about. And holy cow, there's a lot to wrap up.
There is a lot to wrap up. There's just a lot, as there is every year for E3, there's a lot of news, and so this year's no different. And this year was a little bit, felt like a weird E3 in some ways, and so we're going to talk about kind of game of the show type stuff, but we honestly don't have a clue what direction to go with that. And so maybe some of the fun of it will just be talking through the fact that we don't have any clue how to answer that question. Before we get into that, though, there is a handful of news things that have come out over the past few days as E3 was wrapping up, and so it'd be good to touch on some of those. One about hardware, a couple of hardware things. One that's kind of interesting we'll start with here in just a second and speculate on. And then some stuff about some games that we saw. We've got some more details about some of the big titles at E3, including Beyond Good and Evil and Spider-Man, which are two of the bigger titles that we saw, God of War as well in there. So we'll talk about all that, but let's start with this news from Atari, of all places. Atari is making a new console, and that's what we know, but that's a fairly big deal, maybe. So the question I have is this Atari trying to, and I think this is probably the most likely thing, piggyback off of the success of the NES Classic and do a kind of Atari thing that's first party branded and a similar kind of big launch of that? Well, that would be cool. Yeah. It would be fun.
I wasn't overly surprised at this because this is like, hey, we've had all of these games bouncing around for like 40 years that everybody's stolen. Let's give them a reason to rebuy all of these games. So my guess is it's going to be a box with every Atari game that was ever put in existence, good, bad, and ugly. They're all going to be in this box. It's going to be solid state. It's going to be fairly powerful. And people are going to buy it because it's retro.
Yeah, if they take that retro approach and do that kind of thing, I think it could be a fairly big deal. I think it could be a big deal, like the NES Classic was a big deal. And so let's see what that is. What's wonderful. So the CEO of Atari, which is a guy named Fred something. I'm not going to try to butcher his last name. And so we'll just leave it at Fred, our good buddy Fred over at Atari. The only thing he said about this console is that it will be based on, quote, PC technology.
Right.
Which isn't everything. Like, what else is a console going to be based? Like, what do you mean by PC technology? Like, RAM and processors and graphic cards, and like that's what a console is, man. Like
he's probably like, well, you know, it could be based on, you know, this new form of energy that's coming out, and we're gonna work with like Tesla, and it's Elon Musk, and it's gonna be awesome, man. But instead, he's just like, yeah, it's gonna be based on PC architecture. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we'll see. It would be interesting to see though if they wanted to bring something new into the market, like instead of this being like a throwback console, which seems the most likely way that this is going to go. What in the world would Atari do that would be something new, like not throwback, like for new games, something that either competes with the kind of big three at this point, or does something completely different, but also isn't this kind of throwback thing that they're putting out unique new IPs on. I don't know. It's the weirdest thing. I don't understand what Atari really has to gain from this.
It's not going to be new. It's going to be a throwback because that's what Atari is at this point.
I think you're right, but there's the possibility that they could go a different direction with it, which, yeah, I would love to see just because I'm super curious on what they would try to do with it. I don't think they will, but it'd be fascinating to see.
Right.
We haven't had anybody new, and again, Atari isn't quote-unquote new, but they haven't been in the console market for quite some time at this point. We haven't had anybody new jump into the console market since Microsoft did with the Xbox. And so it would be fascinating to see if another company could be kind of disruptive in the video game market.
I think it would be cool, and Atari would be the name to do that. But here's my question, and I don't know if you've seen the quote-unquote trailer, but I love my original Atari. I had one. My cousin gave me one. God bless him, when I was a little kid, with a whole bunch of games, and said, here, and started me on the path that I'm on now. And here I am, like 30 years later, still talking about video games. So I'm thankful to him for that. But for crying out loud, can we ditch the wood grain console?
I know.
But love you guys. My console was wood grain. I love it, but it's 2017, and like I don't want a 1970s style looking living room. Okay, that's why it was wood grain back in the day, because it matched everything else.
Yeah. That being said, that aesthetic is super trendy right now. You know, like the 80s thing is a big deal. Will be for the next. I mean, it's already probably done with, but it has been a big deal for like the last year in style and music and all that kind of stuff. And so if they want to capitalize on that aesthetic, they better do it quick. But you could do something like a little homage to it with like just one strip across the console somewhere that has like the kind of same style of the wood grain or whatever. But yeah, doing a wood grain console in 2017 would be amazingly audacious, right? Like it would be amazingly ballsy to go out there and put out a wood grain looking console. It would be, again, I'm almost as excited about the potential train wreck of this console as I am in it being cool. Like I'm just fascinated by the idea of this.
I think it's gonna be fun to watch. Like, if you really want to get nostalgic with it, somebody go find Nolan Bushnell and say, hey, man, come back and have a little fun with us. You got that guy, you know, back just as a face of it. Like, you're going to sell some units just off that.
Yeah.
I
agree with that.
That's what you got to do. I have no idea what this is going to be. But I tell you, it's like you said, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. So that's the console news out of E3, which wasn't even really anything at E3. They didn't like show us anything at E3, but the news came out during this week, and so it's fun to talk about. So That being done, let's transition into games that we know exist and don't know all the details of. We've had lots of questions about certain games during E3, and so some of those questions have been answered. We'll talk about a few of those, starting with Beyond Good and Evil 2, because that, I think you and I would agree, was the biggest debut, the biggest news, the biggest surprise maybe at E3. That's the game that everybody was like, holy crap, like this, we were not really expecting to see it. We knew it kind of was around. Like, Yumi was kind of teasing that they weren't going to show it and all this stuff. And so Beyond Good and Evil 2 is a big deal coming out of E3. We now have some details about how it's going to play. And so the kind of summary that someone put out is that it's basically Grand Theft Auto in space. Like, that's where we're starting the conversation around this as.
Don't
Grand Theft
tell
Auto
me
in
that.
Space. No. What are you talking about?
Look, okay. All right. I love Grand Theft Auto open world. I know you do too. But that's fine. That sounds like a whole lot of fun. But you got to keep some of that Beyond Good and Evil goodness that was in the original game. And what I mean by that is you got to have some pretty heavy RPG elements in there because it had it. And RPG is something that we're kind of lacking in this day and age. Like, I remember the third Mass Effect. Everybody was like, it's so cool, and you and I whined because there was no RPG. And they can do whatever they want with BG&E, but I got to have my RPG in it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would probably temper the expectation for that a bit, just because that's not really what games look like today. You know, like the Mass Effect kind of evolution, I think, is a really good example of that. Where Mass Effect 3 wasn't very open world either. But let's take that as kind of a good stand-in. If it has the RPG elements of a Mass Effect 3 as opposed to original Mass Effect, or even as a Grand Theft Auto, because Grand Theft Auto has RPG elements to it, I would like to see it more than like what Grand Theft Auto 5 was, but I think of like San Andreas had maybe deeper RPG elements to it. I think that could work. I'm not expecting Beyond Good and Evil 2 to be a hardcore RPG. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be much more of an action open world game. Even just by the trailer, I think, or the teaser, whatever we got at E3, I think that's fairly clear in their direction. And let's be honest, what Yubi does. It is a game being developed by the same people who do Far Cry. And, you know, like they have open world experience, but they're open world kind of stuff. Or Assassin's Creed, even, like taking a lot of kind of those same RPG elements from Assassin's Creed, which has them, but it's still this open world action title. I imagine it's probably where we'll land. And I think more than anything with the kind of GTA in space thing is that it's going to be very adult, you know, just from the teaser, we know that it's going to be a gritty adult game, which the first Beyond Good and Evil, even stylistically, yeah, but even just stylistically, kind of you always had this cartoony feel to it. This is breaking from that a little bit, I think, and just embracing the mature nature of it. And I dig that. I think it's going to be a really good thing for the franchise.
Well, and I see the thing with the original Beyond Good and Evil, I forgot how adult the original was. Because I put Avery in front of it and said, go. And I actually started paying attention. I was like, oh!
So sorry.
Don't pay attention to that. I totally forgot about that. So Beyond Good and Evil has always been that way. I think I'm going to sort of, if some of that is not there, I'm going to miss it because it's part of that art style is what made it what it was and kind of the way that they went about it. But I have no doubt that whatever they choose to do, they can make it good.
Yeah. I agree with that. Also, the player characters has been revealed a little bit. Again, this game is super early in development. We're not going to see it for the next few years, at least. And so who knows what the game actually ends up being. It could change a lot between now and when it's actually released. But the idea right now is that the player character is going to be a kind of generic player character. You develop, you design the character. It's not a set character like Jade was or whatever in the first one. That you're going to start as a space pirate that's on the, quote, very, very low end of the social scale, and then kind of work your way up, getting a crew and a ship and doing all these things and traveling between different systems or planets or however they're going to set that up. And there's going to be a multiplayer component of it. Who knows what that is at this point, but every game at this point has a multiplayer component of it. My hope, and I know this is your hope as well, is that the focus is on making an incredible kind of single-player campaign experience, because that's what we expect from Beyond Good and Evil. But to think that there's not any room in there for some multiplayer interaction, I think is silly too at this point. So, yeah. Give us more of it. I mean, that's at this point. We just need to see more.
I think more would be good, and, like, you know, some idea of where we're going story-wise. I kind of don't like the Shepherd idea of starting with a character that is you from the ground up. I kind of don't like that because... Part of what they made the original work was you always had these two characters that you were working with in Jade and PJ. And they made a lot of the game. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with this, and I may eat a ton of crow on this, but I mainly because it's been bouncing around for a couple of years, and everybody's been waiting on it. I have no idea what to expect, and I'm afraid. Like,
yeah, that's fair. I think that's totally fair.
I think everybody else is afraid, because if you fire up the original Beyond Good and Evil today, and I could go home and fire it up on my machine because I have it on Uplay, it's still good. Like, it's one of those that aged really, really, really well.
Yeah. And it's a phenomenal title. I actually think your idea, your comparison with Shepard from Mass Effect is actually encouraging, in that Shepard ended up being a great character, even though he was customizable. Like,
right.
BioWare figured out how to do the generic character in a way that still made you connect with that character in a deep way. Whereas a lot of other games out there that you build a generic character, you never connect with your character. You know, like,
Say Dragon Age? Thank you very much.
Yeah, or even Skyrim, like, or any of the Elder Scrolls games for that matter. You know, like, even though the character has a backstory, like, in some ways, I would rather play a developed character that isn't supposed to be reflective of me or whatever, as opposed to a generic character that is, because the developer has so much more power with it. Mass Effect, I think, is a game that probably best found that balance. And so I'm actually hopeful that they do it as well as Mass Effect. There's a good chance they won't. It'll be more like an Elder Scrolls or like Dragon Age or something like that, as you say. And so, yeah, we'll see. Moving on to a different game that has a very developed character already, Spider-Man. Got some more details about Insomniac Spider-Man. And first of all, one of the big details of this game is going to be the Spider-Man / Peter Parker character. And so one of the things that Insomniac is talking about is that to expect a lot of the story to revolve around Peter Parker as much as it does around the Spider-Man persona, and so that there's this kind of back and forth between that, which has always been part of the Spider-Man universe, of this kind of the tension, the struggle between those two identities that he has. And I don't remember Spider-Man 2, the game that is so beloved. I played a little bit of it a long time ago.
Dude, that game was awesome. That game was
Peter
awesome.
Parker a part of that game, or was it really just Spider-Man? Like, were you in suit, in costume the whole time?
Like 95% of the time, you were Spider-Man.
That's what I was thinking, again, my reminiscing of it is slight. I love the idea of them exploring Peter Parker more.
As an example, they brought up Arkham during E3 the other day. They said it's a lot like Arkham. Well, Spider-Man, the original game that everybody talks about, was a lot like Arkham to start. It was a lot clumsier. It wasn't as clean, but it was Arkham before Arkham. And I played it. I never finished it, but yeah, it was 95% Spider-Man, and being Peter Parker would be cool, but the thing about Peter Parker is I'm not sure that the character of Peter Parker really lends himself to video games. Like, it's like playing as Bruce Banner in an Incredible Hulk game. I mean, like, you're like, the guy's a little bit boring. He's a little bit of a nerd, and he's stumbling around trying not to get in trouble. And it's like, I can't imagine playing Bruce Banner in a Hulk game. Like, come on, dude, get mad. Let's go to work. That's kind of what I wonder with Peter Parker. Like, how's that going to work?
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think it's a good point. I think a good frame of reference right now is the Telltale Batman game that does that kind of between Bruce Wayne and Batman really well, using that as narrative. And that's where I think, because obviously I want this to be a deep, engaging story along with it, I don't think you can have deep, engaging Spider-Man story without Peter Parker being a big part of it. You know, like,
right,
that struggle has to be there. And so I'm interested to see how they incorporate that. And even if they incorporate some, like, Peter Parker web-slinging without the suit kind of stuff. By the way,
that would be fun.
That would be fun. It was confirmed that this is tech-based Peter Parker, not organic web-based Peter Parker, if I remember correctly.
Right.
I think I got that right.
You did get that right, because I was going to bring it up. And as a guy that grew up with that kind of stuff, I think a lot of people don't think it's a big deal. It's a big deal to me. It's a huge deal to me. That he builds these web shooters and all of that, you know?
Yeah. Agreed. I think that's super cool. And so I'm excited. That also adds in more of an element of development in the game, unlocking stuff through development, that kind of stuff, which could be cool. And again, bring in the Peter Parker side of stuff some. So that's cool. It is open world. That's finally confirmed. And so we know that. We asked that question several times during E3. It will be a big open world. Whether or not we still see that kind of hybrid of the Uncharted thing, like we had talked about, where there's going to be some more, not on rails areas, but limited boundary areas when you're doing some of the storyline stuff, which would make perfect sense. It's going to be 4 to 6 times bigger than Sunset Overdrive was, which was kind of the big last Insomniac game like this. And so big open world, which is cool.
If that's the case, then I'm really excited, because what we saw at E3 was pretty much, for that segment that we did the video on, which, by the way, if you're not a Patreon member, you need to go over there, become a Patreon member, and check that out, because we got a ton of video over there. And one of the videos that we did was on Spider-Man. And on the segment that we talked over, it was very much an on-rails kind of thing. And so if they can figure out how to mesh that, this game is going to be really good.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's going to be a massive thing. I'm really excited about this game. And one of the contenders for kind of game of the year from E3 this year, for sure. And we kind of criticize Sony for ending with it, and I'm not taking that back. But it's a big deal. Like, it's a big game. It's something that's got a lot of hype around it. I think it's going to turn out to be pretty solid. So
absolutely.
A few other games. God of War. A few details. One that I find really interesting about the new God of War title. The idea, and we'll see if they execute this, is that it's one continuous shot for the whole game. And so everything we've seen so far has been in this kind of same camera position over Kratos' shoulder. They apparently developed the game and so that it's a seamless, continuous shot through the entire thing, which will be fascinating.
That's my first thought when you said that was that's not going to work.
Right.
But on the other side of that, I don't know if you saw Creed. Did you see Creed?
I haven't.
You need to see Creed because not the second fight, not the last fight, but the first fight that he does sort of like with Rocky in the corner, that fight is one shot. There's no cuts. And
nice.
It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. But that was like, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes
right.
of video. You can't do a 10-hour game like that, I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. If nothing else, there's just got to be loading in there sometime. Like at some point,
right.
you have to cut just to load or boot up or whatever the game. But even then, if it's, you know, traveling between different areas and kind of continues on the one shot, I'd be fine with that. The thing that I think is more realistic about it is within every kind of contextual environment in the game, if you do that kind of one shot approach to it, it lends itself to a different kind of narrative instead of these more cinematic cutscenes, video scenes where you're going back and forth between the characters. That's going to make it feel a lot more intimate. And that's obviously a big part of what they're trying to do with this game is really make you connect with that relationship between Kratos and his son. And this seems to be a way that the perspective is always on them and specifically over Kratos' shoulder, where either your son's behind you or in front of you, but kind of telling different narratives there, which is it's interesting. I'm interested to see if they pull it off.
I tell you what, it don't matter if the kid's behind you or in front of you. Kratos is going to be grumpy, man.
Right.
Like he's just going to be mad the whole time. And I'm like, you know, the reason that I did, I can't believe I'm about to say this on the air, but I think the reason it made us laugh so much is because I've decided that my dad may be the real life Kratos. like my dad is just mad all the time. You were in my house like 4 days, and I don't think he said nothing to you in four
he
days.
He did not.
He didn't say a word.
No. Nope.
So I was thinking about that. I'm like, my dad is Kratos. Like that's where I live, man.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, I can totally see that. That seems really fair. Jamie's dad is Kratos, so what it's that cracks me up.
Hey, you met him, you spent time with him, you tell me I'm wrong.
No, it's fair. I've talked to him a lot before, just not this trip. Yeah, he didn't say a word to me this trip. So now when I play God of War, I'm going to be picturing Jamie's dad with little Jamie tagging along behind him. It'll be a good time.
Seriously, that's the way he treats me. It's like, crap, not this kid again.
that's both funny and heartbreaking at the same time. Well done.
Hey, it's what I do, man.
Good times. So that's God of War. A couple of things on Far Cry 5, also one of the really big games of the show. Apparently, Far Cry 5 is not going to have towers like the radio towers have been in the past few games where you climb up to the top of them to open up, you know, the map and see different areas and that kind of stuff, or a mini map. And so that will change the kind of navigational gameplay of Far Cry fairly significantly.
And you're probably depressed about that because those, especially the radio towers, is like your favorite part.
Yeah,
of the
for
whole
sure.
Thing.
that more so the base liberation side of it, which I'm interested to see if they keep that mechanic in there. But to be quite honest with you, like it kind of to me, after Zelda did the tower mechanic to perfection, in my opinion, like just like with that big world and the fact that not only, you know, getting to the tower to open up the map for new areas, but also teleporting and flying around from the towers and everything else, which by the way, the wingsuit is supposed to come back in this Far Cry, which is cool.
Yeah.
Which I dig, because it's again, Zelda being Far Cry-ish is now Far Cry being Zelda-ish. Who cares? It's a fun mechanic. But it will change the gameplay a lot in your approach in navigating that environment and opening it up. And so I'm really interested to see how they do that. Again, it may not be such a bad thing to not be compared to Zelda at this point with trying to do something that they did first, but Zelda did better. And so it's interesting. Also, apparently, the companion part of Far Cry 5 is going to be a really big deal with the dog, which everybody loves the dog. The dog was a big hit at E3, but also the different characters, the kind of the mercenary kind of character that we saw in the trailer. I don't remember what
Foxy Lady
that was sniping off of the water tower, I think it was, or whatever. There's going to be a lot of interaction, whereas Far Cry the past few at least have felt pretty isolated, that you didn't have a ton of help a little bit. There were some other NPCs in there. This one feels like you're going to have a lot of that help, and thus also seems like it's going to open it up for a lot of co-op stuff, which is something that I know they want to do. So that's a big deal. Also, speaking of co-op, we have official local co-op for Super Mario Odyssey, whereas the second player plays as Cappy the Hat. That's right. Local multiplayer on Mario Odyssey is going to put player 2 in charge of the hat.
Well, I guess I can do that because I won't have to do anything.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how this mechanic's going to work, but I'm interested. It has a kind of Sonic and Tails feel to it, you know, when you played Sonic and like you could be co-op and play Tails, but like Tails just got left behind and really wasn't an important part of the whole thing. The hat is obviously an important part of Super Mario Odyssey. In fact, the game feels very much built around it. But I don't know that this second player playing as Cappy is going to be a big part of the gameplay. It's almost the little brother co-op kind of thing that you're like, you can't play with this.
You will be yelling at me going, Jamie, hit the button!
Right.
I'll be like, what, dude? No, you'll be like, you've been sleeping for 10 minutes. And I'm like, there's nothing to do. And then the second you throw the hat, like I'm supposed to like wake up and steer it or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Who knows? It'll be interesting, but it's a very Nintendo thing to do to try to tie that co-op in there like that. And by the way, Mario Odyssey killed E3. The people that actually got to play it are also raving about it, not only just seeing a lot of the gameplay stuff for it. It seems like Nintendo is onto something with that, which I was pretty skeptical coming into E3 whether or not they would. Coming out of E3, it looks like they've got a winner there, and it's going to be out this year, and another big title on the Switch, and it's exactly what Nintendo needed from E3, apart from the other stuff that we saw from Nintendo that was a big deal. I think the biggest encouragement for the future of the Switch is what looks to be a really good Mario game that's going to bring in a lot of people.
All I know is I'm glad we have one.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Patreon guys, for buying us a Switch. Y'all are awesome. And if you want to support us on Patreon, go by GamingUncensored.com and click that Patreon link right there at the top of the page and help us buy more fun stuff like games to play on our Switch.
There is a crap ton of content up on Patreon. So if you give us at least $5, that will be opened up to you. And I do mean a crap ton of content. Yeah. And apparently... apparently it's pretty good.
Like, yeah, people are entertained, which is good. Yeah. we didn't know what we were doing with it or if it would be fun at all, and it seems like it was a lot of fun, both for us to do, but also for people to watch. And so, yeah, definitely go check that out. GamingUncensored.com. Click that Patreon link to check it out. Anyway, this is an interesting story, which you can find, by the way, on our Twitter. Go follow us on Twitter at PodcastGU. Lots of retweets and articles and stuff over there, which will be good for our show prep just on a practical side. In the future, we'll be able to just put stuff that pops up on Twitter and then go back and get it.
Yeah, we're attention whores, and we know it. Thank you.
This is one of those stories that's really interesting that you should go read the whole thing. But the premise, the thesis of this article is that PlayStation needs to be more afraid of Mario than of the Xbox, which is a really elegant way of kind of saying what we were trying to say a lot of E3. We just never said it that directly. But I think what E3 showed us in a lot of ways is that Nintendo is suddenly and massively back on the scene and is going to be competing for attention. And Sony, who right now is ahead in this generation as far as the home console, not the handhelds, which we talked about with the 3DS. But Sony's far and ahead with the home console. The Switch is obviously several years behind, but it's going to close ground pretty quickly. That if Sony wants to continue to keep that kind of market share going on a similar trajectory of what they've had, they're going to have to compete more with Nintendo right now and the excitement around Nintendo than the Xbox One, which it still has excitement around it, but it doesn't seem like the Xbox One X is going to have any way, any type, the kind of install base that the Switch is going to have, right? Like, well, even with the Xbox One and the One S out there, the Nintendo Switch is probably going to catch it pretty quickly.
Well, I told you before that I work with three guys that are hardcore gamers. They are hardcore gamers than we are, because whether they have time or not, they put in 2 to 3 hours a night every night, which I don't know how they do it. I guess they don't sleep. I don't know. Either that or we're paying them too much money, but that's neither here nor there. And when I walked in and they knew what I had been doing the past 4 days, they asked me what I thought. And I was, you know, I was kind of going to try and stay off of Nintendo. And one of them looks at me and goes, "You know Nintendo won, right?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm really glad you said that, because I feel the same way." I said, "All of you guys need to go out and get a Switch, because it's that good." And I think everybody out there, for the most part, is saying Nintendo won. And that's a huge deal. Huge deal.
Yeah, I think this isn't something that we have to qualify in this episode, because we already talked about it so much in the other episodes. But you and I are landing in that position for sure of being most impressed with and most encouraged by Nintendo coming out of E3 this year. That's a big deal. Again, it wasn't necessarily expected, though they were set up well for it with this new console that just came out that actually took off, in part, I would say mostly, because it had such an amazing launch title along with it. Again, there were more copies of Zelda sold for the Switch than there were Switches sold, that people were buying Zelda before they even had the console at one point. And so having that level of a title come out, one of the best games of all time come out as a launch title day one with your console, set it up for a big launch, and now they're continuing that momentum. The big question we had going in is, would they continue it? And I think the answer is yes, they're going to continue that momentum and keep building on it and turn it back kind of into the Wii, the every other console thing that we've seen in recent years from Nintendo, which, good for them. I'm pumped about it. We have a Switch. I love Nintendo. We always have. And so I'm excited when any one of these game companies gives me something to be excited to play. And Nintendo has done that for sure this year.
It's going to be, if they keep coming out with games like they came out with this E3, Sony does have to worry. Sony's going to have to take them seriously, because we talked about it during the Microsoft conference. Everything we saw in the Microsoft conference could run on the Switch.
Yeah.
Except
not
for
everything,
Anthem.
Right? But well, just but about. Your point is well
everything.
Made. Yes.
And so I think that's what has got Sony thinking about it more than anything else, is because one thing we learned about the Switch this year is the Switch can do some really spectacular things, and Zelda was not a one-off kind of a thing, which we haven't talked about this. You and I haven't talked about this, and I don't know why, but I kind of had the fear that Zelda was a really, really beautiful thing that they worked on for years, and that this was the top end. Like, this was as good as stuff could look on the Switch, and everything else was going to be trying to compete with that. And I said during E3 that I really feel like the Switch has a lot of headroom and can do some really amazing stuff. For crying out loud, they're going to run Skyrim on the thing. I mean, like...
And to be fair, Skyrim came out in 2011, so... Well, but, it's not pushing the bounds of what a 2017 console should be, but it looks really good. It's not the original version of the game, and so on and so forth. I don't know that Skyrim is the thing that pushes. I don't think Skyrim pushes it more than Zelda does. But the point is well taken.
You know, I mean, I really did. When we saw Zelda for the first time, I was like, this has got to be taking everything the system can do. And I think it turns out that I was incorrect on that. You know, I think there's a lot of headroom with the Switch that I didn't necessarily believe was there.
Agreed. 100% agree, which is exciting. That's good for the future of that console. And even if it only lasts as long as the remaining life cycle of the PS4 and the Xbox One, still pretty good. They're going to make a killing off.
I mean, that's the thing is, think about this, okay? If it only lasts to the end of that cycle and comes out to be number two, Nintendo's going to feel real good.
Yeah, and it very well could. Again, there's a lot more compelling reasons right now to own a Switch, in my opinion, than there is to own an Xbox One. And there's people that would disagree with that, and that's fine, that like the Microsoft titles. But I think in general, you're going to see more people going out and getting a Switch because they're excited about the stuff that they saw at E3 as opposed to an Xbox One.
Right.
So, that being said, let's talk about something that involves all three of these platforms. One of the things that we saw at E3 was some more cross-play, cross-platform stuff. They talked about Minecraft a little bit and some other stuff that's cross-platform. Mostly between Nintendo and Microsoft and PC at this point, Xbox and PC at this point. It appears that Sony and PlayStation is not bought into a lot of cross-platform play on a lot of these different games that we've been talking about. This is a quote from Jim Ryan, who is the head of global sales and marketing for PlayStation, about why they've decided to kind of opt out of a lot of this cross-platform stuff. It says, quote, "We have a contract with the people who go online with us that we look after them, and they are within the PlayStation curated universe, exposing what in many cases are children to external influences we have no ability to manage or look after. It's something we have to think about very carefully." And so basically the argument is we're not doing cross-play because we have kids that play on PlayStation. We're afraid that people on other platforms aren't going to be as civilized or whatever, or we don't have the control to keep them as civilized as we do on the PlayStation Network, which is ridiculous.
That's a lot of crap.
Just a really bad argument. Because two things. First of all, does Sony really do that good at keeping this environment safe on PlayStation Network?
No!
Like, you're not going to get cussed out by 14-year-olds on PlayStation Network? Is that what you're telling me?
Of course you will. Of course it's going to happen. I mean, look, basically what that guy's saying is, and he didn't say it outright, he should have said it outright instead of dancing, but what he was saying that he didn't say was, we think we're better than everybody else. And we think we've got a better online platform. And granted, you and I agree with that statement. I just need them to act more like Cliffy B than what that guy acted like. If you believe you're better, then say you're better. Don't give me this crap about having control. the bottom line is he believes they're better than everybody else, and they are.
Yeah, which is a perfectly fine argument to make. I would take issue with that argument as well, but at least it would be a truthful argument. Phil Spencer responded as kind of second side of this in an interview with Giant Bomb. That he said, quote, "The fact that somebody would kind of make an assertion that somehow we're not keeping Minecraft players safe, I found not only from a Microsoft perspective, but from a game industry perspective, like, I don't know why that has to become the dialogue. That doesn't seem healthy for anyone." Isn't that the truth? Like, that's a much more honest take on that from Phil Spencer, who's not always super honest, but is more candid than a lot of these kind of talking head execs from the big companies. Of like, hey man, you're saying we can't keep our platform safe? That's kind of insulting. We do a good job of taking care of our stuff, you know? Like, screw you, dude. It's kind of reading between the lines on Phil Spencer's response there, which I think is totally fair. Yeah, it's kind of insulting to say that Microsoft and Nintendo don't know how to control their players and Sony does, when obviously that's not true. Sony has just as many problems with ridiculous people on there as anybody else, and that's just part of the world of online play. Of course, there's things that you should do to patrol and help that kind of stuff, but people are people, and you're going to have to deal with that no matter who you are. Microsoft's dealing with it. Nintendo's dealing with it. They're not doing a noticeably worse job than Sony is at dealing with those things. And so, again, it's just that excuse as a rationale is just bunk and ridiculous. And just say, hey, we want to protect our platform. We want to keep it ours because we're in a good place right now. We've got way more people playing on PlayStation Network than on Xbox Live or with Nintendo. I don't know where Nintendo is because they obviously have a big install base, but they don't do a whole lot online stuff. So who knows? PlayStation Network's a big deal. There's a lot of people on there, and they just want to keep it to where you got to buy a PlayStation game to play on PlayStation Network, and that's fine. But just tell us that. Be honest. Don't think we're dumb.
Because we're not dumb. We may be a little slow, but we're not dumb.
Right. And it just makes you look like a tool. And that's... Like, let's be clear about the kind of cyclical nature of the game industry. And the last time that Sony fell on their face was at the launch of the PlayStation 3. Like, that's when they took a big hit and consumer opinion of Sony took a dive. And a lot of that is because they got to this place culturally within the corporation of Sony that they were like, we can do no wrong. They had this arrogance about their approach to everything. And then they came out with a $600 console, and everybody went, whoa, screw that, guys. You know, like, we're going to play the Xbox 360.
And all the difference now is Microsoft nearly as bad because they rolled out a $500 console.
Oh, sure.
And right. Said, hey, look what we got. So now, unlike back in the day when we had the 360, it's like, they're all idiots.
Well, now it's Nintendo that gets to capitalize on
it. Yeah, yeah.
And they're the ones that come out looking good and looking like they care about the consumers, which is a big part of this. You could put out a crazy powerful console, but if it doesn't look like you care about the people who are playing that console, it's probably not going to be very popular. So,
right.
It's corporate trash and just ridiculousness, and Sony thinks that they're getting to be above it because they're really successful right now, and that's going to come back and bite them at some point. So be prepared, guys. It's coming. So, quick few other things before we wrap up on the show and move over to the roundtable. The studio that's behind the Hitman franchise, IO Interactive, has been a part of Square Enix for quite a while. They are no longer. They are now an independent studio. They bought themselves out from under Square Enix and are taking, and this is a big deal for them, they're taking the Hitman franchise with them. And so the one kind of big thing that they have is going to still continue to be under their control. I don't know if this is the freedom of IO Interactive and now they get to do things that they couldn't do before and they're super excited, or if this is the death knell of IO Interactive of like, okay, they're not very viable and they're just hanging on right now. I don't know what I haven't played a Hitman game in forever. It was kind of a big deal at one point. I don't feel like the recent ones have been a big deal, but that could just be us missing them or me missing them. Other games have definitely been that way. It feels like if you're a studio that's completely dependent on the Hitman franchise, you're probably not in a great place. But maybe they got some other stuff they're working on too.
I mean, for crying out loud, if you got one title, you probably ought not go anywhere.
Right.
I mean, like if Hitman is your thing, Hitman ain't that popular. So I don't know about that.
Yeah. We'll see. They're doing this kind of episodic thing. They did the first season of this episodic Hitman. They're supposedly doing a follow-up to that. And we'll see what happens there. I wish them all the luck in the world. I never like to see any of these companies go out of business or anything like that for lots of reasons. One is that competition, the industry is good. Two, there's lots of people that have jobs and get paychecks and pay their bills and feed their families off of these jobs. And so I don't want to see people losing their jobs either. Hopefully they stay successful, at least can do what they need to do to keep up and running. We'll see what happens, but it's interesting. It's not a way you usually see studios like that get bought out by, you know, these big publishers, as opposed to them breaking off and going back independent. That doesn't seem to happen nearly as often. They usually just get shuttered under the umbrella of whatever big company took them over. This is not that happening, and so it is a different thing than how this kind of evolution usually works within the game industry.
Absolutely. Good luck, guys. You're gonna need it.
Yeah. it's a cruel world out there. So the HTC Vive, shifting to VR a bit, which, by the way, let me mention while we're just mentioning VR here, not the HTC Vive, but Sony's PlayStation VR. There is a ton of PlayStation VR content out there that wasn't part of press conference. We saw the handful of games, including Moss, which now I've seen a lot more of, and it's an interesting little title in VR. But they've showed off a lot of other stuff at E3 this year. Again, Sony is trying to be the destination for VR and is putting out a lot of software to back that up. So,
and I'll tell you the back on the previous story that we were talking about, that they needed to fear Nintendo. If they become the VR platform, Microsoft better go do something else, okay? Because if you got Nintendo and then Sony being the best place for VR, Microsoft better pack it in.
Yeah, it kind of feels like they're pulling out these niche areas where Sony's going, you know, kind of heading into that VR category. Nintendo's doing Nintendo, honestly, is doing the Nintendo thing with Mario and their first party franchises, Pokemon and Yoshi and Metroid and all the things we're excited about with Nintendo are Nintendo things, which is what they do well. Microsoft's niche feels like it's making a console that the only people that have the money to buy it are probably people that have high-end gaming PCs. You know,
right.
Like if I could do a gaming high-end gaming PC or an Xbox One X, I'd still do a high-end gaming PC.
Yes.
It's just a weird niche.
What's funny is, I came into to work Thursday, work with a bunch of hardcore gamers, and they all said the exact same thing. Man, they really screwed up with the Xbox One X. They really messed up. That's what guys that should be buying into it are saying. And so that's not good.
Yeah. It's not the idea. We'll see what happens with it. I'm interested. All that being said, back to the HTC Vive, speaking of that high-end gaming rig, if you've got that gaming PC that could do high-end virtual reality, then this is of interest to you.
And we do! Hello!
Right, super excited about that. I haven't set up the Vive yet. I might do that tonight and start playing around with it in my house, because it's back in my house for a little while, which I'm pumped about. So, all that being said, thank you, Duff, for that while we're here. E4, brought to you by Duff. We love Duff. The price point on the HTC Vive is not changing anytime soon. HTC is actually quite happy with the sales numbers of the Vive, and thus think they're in kind of a good spot right now. And so keeping the price point where it is. So if you were hoping for the VR market to start coming down price-wise, especially on the PC side of things, you're going to have to keep waiting. It's not there yet. And again, if you want the highest level VR experience that's either on the Vive or the Oculus, and I think they're pretty comparable at this point now that the Oculus has the Move controls out there and does room scale stuff more. So they're doing very similar things at a much higher just fidelity level than even what PlayStation VR is doing, but without the focus, without the kind of support probably that PlayStation VR has in its software library.
And the thing about the Vive is is like, I'm kind of shocked that the price is not coming down. But you know they're going to make adjustments with the controllers. I can already tell you the next thing we're going to be buying is updated controllers, because something I never thought I would say is that the Oculus controllers right now are better than the Vive controllers.
Oh, yeah.
By far.
Those Oculus controllers are slick, lots of cool things that the Vive controllers don't. So, yeah, it does feel like a big upgrade on the Oculus controllers at this point.
So, yeah, we may spend way more money than we ever thought possible. Actually, we won't spend it. We'll take it from Patreon.
Yeah.
Thank you for Patreon people. But if we get something similar to those Oculus controllers on the Vive, I'm guessing they're probably going to be, what, $80-$90 bucks a piece?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be cheap. And that's probably on the cheap end. They're probably over $100 a piece, but it will be worth it.
Yeah, the Oculus Touch controllers are $100 a piece. I believe a piece. Let me make sure it's not a pair. Doesn't seem like it, but although everything is showing is in a pair, it'd be awesome if it was $100 for the pair of them. That'd be pretty
right.
Good.
That'd be good. Yeah. We could do that.
Two controllers, one sensor, two controllers. So yeah, $100 for two of them. That's way better than I thought. So yeah, give us some of those. Vive, we'll be super pumped about that.
HTC, we'll buy those in a heartbeat.
Whatever,
I mean,
a Nintendo Switch dock is $70. That's ridiculous.
We haven't had a chance to play with them yet, but I've done enough research on them to know that they are absolutely stellar. So Vive, whenever you want to come out with the new controllers, I'm all over that.
Agreed, 100%. One last thing here to finish up with this show before we again transition into the roundtable. Just the final numbers around E3 2017 and a look ahead at E3 2018. E3 2017 ended as the highest attendance show, I believe. Almost 70,000 people, including 15,000 public tickets that they sold this year. We didn't talk about that, but this is the first time that they've done tickets just to the general public. It's always been not hard to get into E3 necessarily, but you had to have some kind of press credential or something. This year they did just sell tickets for whoever wanted to show up for it. And so nearly 70,000.
We could get press credentials, and if we can get press credentials, anybody can get in.
Right, yeah. They had 50,000 people last year with slightly more stringent requirements to get in. So, yeah, it's never been terribly difficult, but almost 20,000 people more this year, which is a pretty big deal. Next year's E3 will be the same time period. It'll be the 12th through the 14th. And so same week of June, same thing, Los Angeles Convention Center, which will be there next year and probably the year after. But they actually don't have anything on contract after that. And so we may see E3 move after 2019. But next year's E3 will be a lot of the same. Same time, same place, all that stuff. So we're just a year out from the greatest time of the year.
Woohoo! I can't believe we had to wait that long. Like, seriously? I'm not joking. I had some serious depression. Like, I'm still having serious depression about the fact that I have to go back to my life because my life ain't that cool. So,
E3 is much cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we have to wait a year to do it again, but we will do it again. We'll do a lot before then. Obviously, you will be hearing from us on a regular basis, but we do love E3.
Yeah, I'm excited that. It's going to be there for the next couple of years because when it moves, wherever it moves, that's going to suck. Because LA is hard to get around, but there are other places in the world that if you held a convention like that, the other obvious place, of course, would be Vegas. And Vegas is busy anyway. I can't imagine holding E3 there on top of everything else that happens in Vegas.
That would be a cool place for it. It would make a lot of sense.
Right, absolutely.
So, anyway, that's it for, well, one more show. We got one more E3 show for you before we get back into our regular routine of things. So, thanks for hanging out for us, E4 2017. We had a good time.
We did, and it's not quite over yet. We got the roundtable coming up. So, if you're not a Patreon member, please, 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 please go over to Patreon and check that out. Get on the next roundtable. Because what we're about to do with our roundtable, guys, is going to be a lot of fun. I think everybody is showing up this week. So
yeah, it should be a good crowd.
Everybody's really excited. I'm really excited. So if you're not part of the roundtable, please come join us. It'll be a lot of fun. Other than that, I think that's about it. We've spent a week covering E3 and... Now I have 51 weeks of normal life to get through.
Right.
So, that being said, for right now, I'm Jamie, that's Tommy. This is Gaming Uncensored, continuing coverage of E3 2017. It's E4, and it's only on GamingUncensored.com, and we are out.